Ball slapped away from Booker, stolen by Stevenson. He'll go to the hoop on the right side and then send it to the unguarded Oladipo for a layup.
And we welcome you inside another Sideline Guys podcast alongside Jeremiah Johnson. I'm Pat Boylan. Interesting note, with two consecutive wins, did you know the Pacers are the hottest team in the NBA, or in the Eastern Conference right now?
I did actually know that, and I saw that yesterday. I think it maybe was Tim Bontemps who originally tweeted, and I think it's taken off because yesterday, with a one-game win streak, the Pacers had tied for the longest win streak in the Eastern Conference. And I'd seen some of the numbers and some of the reporting about the East-West comparisons, and for so much of the year in the head-to-head matchups, the East had an advantage, and I think the West has moved past the East. And I think maybe the disparity is not what many expected it would be earlier in the season, but you could still say the West is the stronger conference. I don't think that we need to be naive, but the East is much better than most had expected. The head-to-head matchups are better, and we'll probably get into the All-Star discussion a little bit, but I think if they kept East versus West in the All-Star game, it would have maybe been a better game maybe than people thought of in the past, and maybe it still would have been a West victory. I have some other thoughts on why I think maybe it'll work a little bit better this way. But all in all, the East has been better. The East is going through a rough patch, and I can't say that I'm disappointed about that, because normally when I'm checking the scores on a nightly basis, there are a few teams that I'd probably just as soon lose, and they're Eastern Conference teams in the 3 through 9 range, and right now those teams are not playing well.
Yeah, to back what you're talking about, actually, David Benner asked if I had the stat of East versus West this year, and that was actually something that I didn't immediately know how to find, but I quickly pulled up the Eastern Conference standings, and they have, if you go to expanded standings against the West, and I just did a quick count, and if I was right, with the East going 2-2 against the West on Wednesday, the West would be 11 games ahead of the East. However, the Bulls are 2-16 against the West, so it's almost like all of that is Chicago. And if, of course, you can't take out one of your worst teams, because the West would like to take out one of their worst teams, I'm sure as well. But that was kind of interesting. If the Bulls were just playing a little bit better against the West, it would be everybody else is playing pretty close to even with that, with the conference. And the Pacers, I thought, just the two games against the Suns, and the final score here is maybe not totally indicative of the game, and there were some moments, unfortunately, at the end where things stopped being all sunshine and rainbows, and Nate McMillan had to put a couple starters back in when he had a lot of the third unit in. But bigger picture against Phoenix, this is a team that is young, has some potential talent, but really a team that you should take care of twice. In the NBA, that's so much easier said than done. We've seen even some of the better teams. Boston just recently has had a bad loss. Two games against Phoenix where they've come in, set the tone early, taken care of business when necessary. And that's really impressive, I think, for a group, the Pacers, that doesn't have, you know, a ton of experience, I would say, is younger versus older, and still, you know, has a lot of moving pieces from last season. I've been impressed how the Pacers took care of business against the Suns this year.
I found myself watching that game and thinking the same thing that I felt watching the game in Phoenix, which was, how have the Suns won this many games? I mean, you can look down. They're 17-31. And so when you see them play the way they played at Phoenix against the Pacers, and then last night, as we tape this on Thursday, Wednesday night, you wonder, you know, how is this not the worst team in the NBA? And I think that, you know, a little bit back to the discussion about East versus West, I think that the teams are just better. There are not the teams just flat out trying to lose like Philadelphia of a few years ago. And every team that you say is bad, you reference the Bulls and their poor record against the West. Well, you know, what's their record then against the East? Because they're 18-30 overall, so they're probably about,
so they'd be over 500.
They're over 500
under against the West, so that would mean they're over 500 against the East.
So they've won 18 games and they beat the Pacers once. And I think this goes back to over the last week. I heard some people discussing the Pacers and say, "How can you lose to the Lakers? And then how can you win in San Antonio?" And I think that is something that happens more around the NBA than we're seeing with this Pacers team. Remember the stat in early December where the Pacers had not lost to a team with a bottom 11 or 12 record, and it had kind of fluctuated with the Knicks whether they were a bottom 12 or bottom 11 team. And I thought that was impressive, because it was the one thing that I thought we could go into this season sort of expecting, was they would not overlook the weaker opponents. They would play as hard as they could. There may be some games that they would be overmatched, but they would pretty much, you know, give it their all, and if they were better than a team, then they would win those games. And if you take out the stretch where Victor Oladipo did not play, I mean, there have been a couple other losses since then that you'd like to have back probably, and the Lakers game is certainly one of those, but I'll probably do some number crunching because I've been thinking about this, and I thought about it on my drive in today, that games with Victor Oladipo, both against bottom 10 to 12 teams and also against the bottom 15 teams in defense, the Pacers have a sparkling record. So if you're projecting forward, if Victor's playing and Victor is healthy and you're taking on one of the bottom half teams in both record and defense, either or both, the Pacers have a very good chance. And I think that it was a great example in those two games against Phoenix.
Just in general, and you can do this with any team. Almost every team deals with injuries to their best players, but it's amazing to think the Pacers are 26-17, I believe, this year when Victor Oladipo has played. I mean, that's a phenomenal record. You know, that's probably close to 50 wins if you play that over the course of the season. And again, you're not saying the Pacers have had bad luck because there are teams whose best players have been out for the entirety of the season. But I think it really speaks to how good the Pacers have been when they've had Oladipo. And one other thing I want to touch on before we get to All-Star Weekend and all this stuff. Even when the Pacers lost those two games out west, the defense wasn't the problem. And last night against Phoenix, they allowed 36 in the fourth when they had third stringers in and things, you know, got a little bit out of hand. And what was a 38-point lead ended up being only a 15-point win. But in the three quarters where the game was really won, I guess, for the Pacers, and you could argue it was won in the first quarter in hindsight, but in the first three quarters when Indiana had their starters out, were playing with intensity, the defense was, again, really, really good. They ended up giving up 101 because of that 36-point fourth quarter, but for all intents and purposes, the Pacers have now gone seven consecutive games where they allowed Portland 100. They allowed Phoenix 101, but that was only because of the fourth quarter, and they did that against guys like Ben Moore and Alex Poitras, who are, you know, hopefully developmental pieces, but not guys you're playing typically a lot right now. And otherwise, those other five teams have been under 100. So you talk about consistency and breeding consistency and what that takes. The Pacers have been better on the offensive end all season, and I think that's going to be why they win most of the time. But their defense, actually, their efficiency was 15th in the league, which doesn't sound remarkable. It's league average. But when your offense is in the top 7 or 8, a 15th-ranked defense is a real asset to have with you, that you're not getting hurt on the defensive end, and you're allowing your offense to win these games. And over those 7, I think they're 5-2, and I think the defense deserves a lot of credit.
In the 2 days between the Spurs game and the Suns game, defense was kind of what I was thinking about as storylines and things that I needed to focus in on before the Suns game. And so in looking at that and talking with producer Ken Sothlin, producer Max Linewand on Fox Sports Indiana, we looked at the defensive rating by month. And in January, the Pacers, heading into the Suns game, fourth best defensive rating, also fourth in points allowed in the month, averaging opponents 98.9 points per game. And in the six wins that the Pacers had prior to last night's win against the Suns, opponents were shooting under 43%. And so I think defense, and I was even on Sirius XM radio over the weekend, one of the questions Amin El-Hassan had asked me was, he rattled off some individual players on the Pacers roster saying those are above average defenders. Why have the Pacers not been more successful on defense? And, you know, I had a tough time answering the question because I think they were giving maybe a little bit more credit individually to some of the players than maybe they are at this point in their careers defensively, but they're actually probably better than most people think they are defensively. And I talked with Dan Burke about it before the game, and I'll probably share a little bit of this during the broadcast on Friday, but I showed him the defensive numbers in terms of the defensive rating, because I always wonder with Dan, you know, he's someone who is, you know, been talking and teaching defense his entire career. So does he get into defensive rating? Does he see that is a stat that he wants to try to, use as whether success or, you know, needs improvement? And he said he really wasn't looking at defensive rating and did not, you know, care necessarily about the points per game given up, which I think in this era, people probably don't look at that as well. They look at the points per possession. But what he likes is the deflections. And that was something in the first quarter of the game against the Suns. He said, our deflections are up in January. I'm really happy about that. At the end of the first quarter, and I shared this during the broadcast, he looked at the video staff, Jared Bartling was doing the deflections stat keeping during that game. And he said, how many deflections? And it was hard to hear Jared. And so Dan thought he said 10, and he kind of looked at him and he said 10, and Jared's like, no, 19. And Dan got this expression like, 19, and he immediately shared that with the team. And then I asked Jared kind of quickly because he's busy and I don't want to bother him. But it's like that, because I thought based on when I've heard those discussions happen before, that was a lot. I said, he's like, we think that might be a record for a quarter. And then once again, the team deflection stats, a little bit different criteria than what you see on NBA.com. They maybe award a few more deflections for things if you get your hands on the ball. But regardless, deflections are up in January. And the other thing that Dan referenced was shots challenged. And it's something that is important. He said, I'm not talking about in the paint and layups because all of those are technically challenged. But jump shots, we want to be at 40%. And for much of the season, we'd been 30 to 35%. And in January, we're 40. So the numbers Dan cares about, they do have a direct correlation to the ones that most people use with defensive rating and points allowed. And so overall, the defense is really improving, and I think everybody is buying in. The communication, Dan says, still needs to be a little bit better, but that's the same with every team. And so we're seeing some significant improvements. That's not to say they're not going to have a game where somebody scores 120 or they give up a big number in that points per possession category, but I think everything has really improved in January.
Yeah, and I think one of the more amazing stats in this, you know, maybe doesn't speak to the defense entirely big picture, but the fact that Victor Oladipo now has a steal in 32 consecutive games, which is second all time. You know, it's amazing to think Paul George, if you look at this list of consecutive games with the steal, George is in the top 10 like three different times, but he never had 32 in a row. And that segues, I think, pretty well into maybe the biggest topic of our discussion here, which is All-Star Weekend, All-Star players. And, you know, I don't want to feed too much into what is the I don't want to say the Pacers Reddit angle of this because I love those guys, and if I were a fan, I think I would be all over this. Important to note that Paul George is probably an all-star with these numbers in the Eastern Conference. That said, just at face value, all of the following is true. The Pacers traded their franchise player last year, and the only all-star in 2018 in that trade was one of the guys they got back. And that's stunning because Victor Oladipo clearly deserves this. I think, you know, had a shot to be a starter, although I had no qualms with it being Irving and DeRozan. But what Oladipo has done this season, we talked about it week in and week out on this podcast, and you could really see what it meant to him, talking to him a couple hours before he was selected and then the morning after he was selected. It was almost like a realization of a long-time dream. And, of course, he talks about, you know, there are bigger dreams than being a reserve on the NBA All-Star team. But you think about your own, you know, career and successes that you've had and what it felt like to, you know, knock off a certain notch that you wanted to, you know, one day hit. This is a big one for him, and it was very, very clear how genuine he was. I thought yesterday morning he wasn't all uppity and excited and like he can be on some interviews. It was sort of like almost a wow. This really happened. This is here for all of the, you know, relative adversity that he's faced, not being a really high recruit. You know, he was the second overall pick, but once he was there, he's, you know, been traded twice in 2 years. To come to this realization in this moment for him, you could tell meant a lot.
I think with so many clutch moments and big shots that he's hit and high-scoring games, he's realized he's taken a step in his career. He's at another level that he was not at previously, and so there has been some satisfaction. But you always think about watching the All-Star game, and I asked him a month ago, I think, about the All-Star festivities, and did you watch it as a kid? And he's been asked it since then, and he said, oh yeah, I mean, everybody watches the All-Star game, and he'd been a part of the weekend before in his career. He'd been in the slam dunk contest already once, and in the Rising Stars Challenge as well, and he'd been, you know, a lot of people in the NBA, you know, Paul George will be at All-Star Weekend, even if he's not playing in the game, probably be in the three-point shootout now, I'm guessing, or something. The NBA will find a reason to get somebody like that involved, but you want to be playing on Sunday night, and I think that was something that I think Victor even said to you last night. I was sitting talking with Eddie, and I said, what's that Sunday comment mean? And I think, you know, you think we're playing on Sundays, you think about that as a football comment,
right?
But I think he might have been thinking back to being at All-Star Weekend, you know, other times, and maybe leaving town early or just kind of being there for some of the media or the sponsor obligations. But you know you've arrived if you're playing Sunday night with the bright lights on and those fancy introductions. And, you know, I love watching a lot of All-Star Weekend, and so I'm looking forward to it. And I guess the other thing that I'll add to this is there were so many sort of mixed emotions, but just, you know, unpleasant thoughts, I think, in July and August about what not necessarily the future would bring, but really, I guess, what this season would bring. And it was really fun last year and the last couple of years to have the Pacers represented on All-Star Weekend. And the Pacers were such a big part of last year's All-Star Weekend with Glenn Robinson III dunking and with Paul George playing. And Paul had been a big player. And then even before that, Roy Hibbert was playing in the weekend. So you don't want to be the franchise that's not at All-Star Weekend, that doesn't have any representation. And I think in August and September, I was probably not real optimistic about what the Pacers' chances were to have somebody in the weekend. They didn't really have a second-year player. You didn't know if TJ Leaf would be a rising star. You didn't know, you know, you thought maybe Glenn Robinson III would at least be back to defend his dunk title, and that's the one that won't be, just through no fault of his own, through the injuries. But to have Domas Sabonis in the Rising Stars Challenge and to have Victor Oladipo playing in the game, and someone who people are just adoring Victor right now. And I was on with JMV on the ride yesterday, and he was talking about Victor coming along at just the right time for a franchise that really needed him. And I think that was a pretty good point, because people were disappointed about what Paul did in terms of not wanting to be here, or at least letting it known. And he could have had good intentions to maybe help the franchise. In the end, it worked out great. But people were just disappointed, like, can we be successful? Can we be a proud winning franchise again? And immediately, because of really the two guys that will be playing All-Star Weekend, the Pacers are back at that winning level, and they're back in the spotlight. And kudos to both of those guys that Kevin Pritchard was able to acquire from Oklahoma City.
It's funny that you mentioned the All-Star Weekend thing and potentially not having a guy there at the beginning of the season, because I remember there being a debate who was going to lead the team in scoring. Not even is Victor Oladipo an All-Star, is he going to lead the team in scoring? And I believe it was Zach Lowe made the comment, you know, there's a potential, and this might have been in his piece where he ranked the Pacers 30th in watchability at the beginning of the year, but I think it was him who said there's a potential that Bojan Bogdanović could lead the team in scoring. I mean, it's amazing where we've come from the beginning of the year, and I wanted to play, because real quickly we'll play this here. You were referencing the interview with Oladipo, A, from the aspect of talking about playing on Sundays, and that also kind of took me a second to register and what exactly he was talking about. But I do think he was referencing, you go to that whole All-Star Weekend, there's a whole lot of stuff going on, but the main event, of course, is on Sunday night. But let's play real quick, courtesy of Fox Sports Indiana, this interview, because I think this might have been my favorite comment I've ever heard from a player from a question I've asked before.
What's it like to learn that Domantas Sabonis will be joining you at All-Star Weekend in the Rising Stars Challenge?
I mean, it's just like when you realize your brother's, you know, going with you on a school field trip or something. You know, you're excited. I'm looking forward to it.
You've mentioned so many times that you guys are connected in so many interesting ways, including your birthdays just a day apart. This adds to the list, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely something I always remember, something he'll always remember, and hopefully we just keep working. So a lot of us are playing on Sundays, so it'd be awesome.
And you mentioned being on with JMV yesterday. I was also on with our Fort Wayne affiliate in a talk show they have up there. And a similar question was asked, just about the vibe with Paul George, the vibe with Oladipo. And, you know, comments like that, there aren't many players, I think, who maybe immediately would have gone to, oh, it's like when your brother goes on a field trip with you.
Do they need a chaperone? Because I'd like to go now.
Yeah, which I don't think my brother literally ever went on a field trip with me. But he, you know, that I'm not talking so specific of that comment, but just kind of the general vibe and the way he thinks about things and the way he responds and how genuine he is. It was asked about, you know, Paul and him and the differences in the locker room. And first of all, Paul George won an award his second to last year from some of the local writers on being the best interview. So every time we get asked questions like this, I'm always real quick to try to not turn it into anything sort of a Paul George bash fest. Look, the decision he made was frustrating and disappointing. But, and the way he went about it, I think, was the most frustrating and disappointing part about it. But, you know, Paul was, for the most part, a pretty good interview. There were some frustrations his last year. He took so long, and a lot of times we couldn't get it on the TV post-game show, just how long he would take to actually talk. But overall, you know, Paul was a pretty good interview. But it's interesting now seeing Paul and seeing Victor and the way they handle these things. And I don't think it would be fair to say that George handles any of this poorly, but it's almost like you realize now that you're seeing how Victor handles a lot of this that, oh my gosh, like there's a different way to handle some of these things. And while George maybe wasn't doing it negatively, you just see the way that Victor always includes his teammates in things and the way he answers some of these questions. I mean, Domantas Sabonis even followed that, you know, quote up with a tweet about how it was funny to be a field trip brother or whatever. But I guess I'm a little bit at a loss for words exactly what I'm trying to say. But just the way Victor handles, I think, his day-to-day, George wasn't bad at it by any means, but I think I'm starting to see a little bit of, oh, you know, this is maybe exactly how you do it. This is how you teach a guy to lead a team. And some of that has been refreshing, and I mean none of that in any sort of insult to George.
I think you said it pretty well, and I've done the same thing when asked about Paul George, because I used to think that for whatever deficiencies there were, I was thankful that the Pacers superstar was the way he was in terms of being open with the media and willing to answer questions, and really gave us pretty good material. You know, for our jobs, we have, each of us have our own 30-minute program that is before every game that we kind of have to help plan or discuss or come up with, you know, help at least come up with content for. And it helped to have Paul George around because he was a willing soundbite. But you also do see the difference in the way Victor answers questions. And also, a lot can be done in those interviews to not just help the reporters, but what you say can also help your teammates. And so I don't think players in the NBA necessarily are recording the pregame shows and watching them later. And I don't know that they're even in an era where they are even reading the game recaps or the preview stories in the newspaper or online. But you can bet that the quotes that travel, they hear and they catch wind of. And so when things are going poorly and a star player throws another under the bus, it gets back to those players, and it just creates problems. And we can see it with our own eyes and ears and hear it with our own ears happening in Cleveland. And that's a franchise that's been successful. So I think they learned to deal with it. But it's also, you could say, not a locker room that seems very cohesive and happy right now. And I don't know that the Pacers' locker room was bad in the last couple of years, but I do think, especially now seeing this one, it wasn't the same. And that's because everyone always has each other's back. When Bojan Bogdanović makes a bad pass and costs his team the game, no one came close, publicly or privately, of blaming him. I mean, there might have been an initial like reaction, how what happened in the moment, and then once you had a second to step back, you had your teammates back. And Victor Oladipo, not everything that he says, and it's probably my fault sometimes on the interviews, you've got to ask Victor a good question, and if you ask a good question, you will get a good answer. But the best answers he gives are when you ask him about a teammate. I mean, invariably, he could score 47 points, and I've learned in a walk-off interview, I'm going to make sure to ask him something about either the teammate, the team as a whole, or a specific teammate, because you're guaranteed to get a really good comment. And that is exactly what happened with you when, you know, you asked him about Domas Sabonis being in Los Angeles with him. And it was the same, and it's been the same almost every time I've talked to him. And it was the same even last night with Thaddeus Young. I mean, Thaddeus is probably the best talker on the team, but the best thing I think he said last night was when I asked him about Victor. So I think that says a lot about the makeup of this team. A lot of credit goes to Kevin Pritchard and the front office staff, and a lot of credit as well to the coaching staff, because Kevin Pritchard and company put the team together, and then it's the coach's job to kind of make sure everybody, make sure it all sings. And it's been singing, and Victor's been singing also.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think well said. All right, we've got about 8 minutes here. We've got to run to practice. So we've got a few Twitter questions. Let's run through these, and then we definitely want to get some Cleveland talk coming up because that's coming up.
I posted this hoping we would get some, you know, offbeat questions. I said, what do you want me to ask Pat Boylan, not what do you want to ask that we will answer? But everyone's just kind of being really serious right now.
Except the guy who said Tide Pods are better.
Better than our pod.
Yeah.
As long as you're using them for the intended purpose. I do. I am a... we do use pods in our washing machine right now instead of the powder.
Yeah.
But so it's been a
for the washing washing machine can get it.
Yeah, exactly. Don't even go another direction. Corey Clark tweets, when Miles Turner returns, do you still see Al Jefferson getting any minutes? And that was something I've been thinking about actually in the last couple of days as well. I think there's a place for Al, depending on the matchup, But I would say 70 to 75% of the teams that I would think you could put him in and stretches in maybe the second quarter and play him and just bolster your bench a little bit and throw a different wrinkle at opposing teams. I'm not 100% confident that will happen. I think we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, I think as Miles starts to come back, and I think without any hard news that there's just been kind of good observations with him, watching him go through practice, I think we're hopefully getting closer. I think you'll see Miles start to play a little bit more, Jefferson start to play a little bit less. I don't know. I agree with you, though. I think there are some matchups where certainly Jefferson can come in and make a difference, especially on the offensive end. There are games maybe where he's not a great matchup. There are some where he is a good matchup. So I would not be stunned if Miles comes back and plays full complement of minutes if they aren't able to find 8 minutes here or there for a guy like Jefferson. I think he's proven that, and a lot of credit to his professionalism for being good in these moments. J.C. Cotton asked an analysis of Joe Young starting last night. You know, you look at his stat line, there's nothing stunning there. I've been impressed with Joe, and I'll admit that this has been a little bit surprising to me just how well he has fit into all of these different roles, because he hasn't played for most of his career. When he was with the third team, he'd come in and immediately throw up a ton of shots. When he started getting a role with the second team, which I think is going to be more of his role for the rest of the year, I thought he was better. You know, he takes the shots when he needs to, and he knows, you know, his playmaking is his greatest skill, but he is not selfish in that role. And I thought last night he came in, his stat line's not that impressive when you look at it, but he didn't cause any disruption within a pretty well cohesive starting unit, and I think that is a credit that's not going to show up in the box score, but I think maybe one Joe deserves.
You think of Joe Young, and you think of someone who's a scorer, and that maybe he wants to come in and get shots up, and I think that's probably what I was most impressed with his performance, is that he did not try too hard to score, and he let the offense come to him. He finished the game 3 for 7, and some of those shots were, you know, possibly in the second half, and I don't know the breakdown of the quarter by quarter, but to play 33 minutes and to stay within himself, not try to force things, did have 3 turnovers, but 2 assists as well. And for the most part, you know, at times he's not necessarily handling the ball the entire time. Vic's handling the ball. Lance is handling the ball. He still got in with the second unit a little bit as well. But I liked Nate's decision to keep that second unit together, because without Sabonis in the second unit, if you didn't have Lance and Corey together, your second unit really doesn't have much chemistry at all. So it was good to see Joe be able to hold his own and have everything work out. And you hope the best that Darren will be back soon as well.
All right, quickly, Kez asks if the goal has changed from playoffs at the start of the year. Has the goal been reset higher? I think so. I think playoffs is still a huge goal, and that's far from a given right now. But I think there's higher aspirations within the locker room. Let's move here now. We've got about 4 minutes. Our pick three, the Pacers go for it. This might be if the Pacers win on Friday, this might be the wildest thing you could have said at the beginning of the season, which has had a lot of wild moments, that the Pacers have the ability, the potential to sweep the Cleveland Cavaliers in a series where LeBron James plays in all 4 games. Our pick three is going to be favorite moments from the first 3 wins, or maybe not even favorite, but moment that stands out the most. And I'm going to give you the first one here, because you were in Cleveland. And of those 3 games, which all had amazing moments, maybe the way that Cleveland won tailed off early in the season was the most surprising, because the Pacers had yet to beat them and were still pretty fresh off that 4-game sweep in the playoffs.
And it was one of those moments early in a season where you heard about a Cavs team meeting. I mean, it was very early in the season, and the Cavs were a little bit of a fractured group at that point, and you were wondering if they would get everything put together. And you didn't have a lot of confidence, I don't know, from a Pacers perspective that early in the season, because you'd yet to really see who this team was and what they were capable of. And so it was probably, I would agree, the most surprising of the wins. It was reminiscent a little bit of previous games in that LeBron was getting all the calls. I just went back and checked my Twitter. I just did a Twitter search, LeBron and at JJFS Indiana. And so trying to remember what I remembered. And so one of the tweets I put out was flagrant 1? And I said, I agree with QB. It was just a play. LeBron had a crazy reaction to a foul, drew a flagrant foul.
Oh, I forgot about that. Who was it on? Was it Lance?
I think it was Lance, but I'm not 100% sure. But it was one of those, like, how many times do we have to see this? And another tweet I had was another foul-free game for LeBron. He and Love, the only starters on either team without a foul. That was, I think, late in the third quarter, and he eventually got a foul. And the other moment I'll remember is Bojan Bogdanović picking LeBron's pocket. And everyone thought going into that game, Nate's going to let Boyan guard LeBron. How is this going to happen? We've seen it happen a little bit more, although I do like that he's mixed and matched a little bit, and Thad Young maybe even on Friday will get the assignment a little bit more than Boyan. But the fact that LeBron picked his pocket and then went in and scored, and no one really knew much about Boyan's defense at that point in the season, it was a very satisfying win, and it was on the second half of back-to-back, something this team did very rarely in the last couple of seasons, especially on the road. So that's what stands out about the first win in this epic regular season series, Pacers-Cavs.
Game number two was a really close game. I don't think either team ever had more than like a 6 or 7 point lead throughout the entirety of it. But the thing you remember the most about game two is what's interesting is the Pacers have faced the Cavs in so many different versions of themselves. Game one, it was still early in the year. Game three, the Cavs were really struggling. Game four, they're still really struggling. But game two, they had actually won 13 games in a row. And the Pacers, who just recently busted San Antonio's 14-game home-winning streak, busted that 13-game winning streak from the Cleveland Cavaliers. It was close. The Pacers, that fourth quarter, I think the first three quarters were like a marathon up and down the floor, and then the fourth quarter turned into a defensive battle. But that game number two, my pick will be just ending that streak, that 13-game streak that the Cavs were on. And while that didn't immediately turn into the poor play that we're seeing, that didn't really start until Christmas, and this game was a little bit earlier in December, really ever since that game, the Cavs haven't been remotely near that level. So the Pacers knocking off the Cavs 13 in a row, that's what I remember about game number two.
It is crazy because people talk about the good Cavs stretch of this season. I believe it's 18 of 19 that they won, and that one loss was to the Pacers, so that's an impressive win. So the final one, we'll both share a thought about the third of the three Pacers wins against the Cavs this season, and it's another drama moment for Cleveland coming into the game in January, struggling, you know, trying to right the ship, to use a cliche, and the Pacers had lost a game to Miami that they really felt like they should have won. I mean, that was the 1-for-18 game right before the Pacers played the Cavs, but you know, you figure an angry Pacers team and an angry LeBron and Cleveland, you maybe still give the upper hand to the Cavs. I hate to say it, but sometimes you do. And then you get word before the game. I don't know whether this was really reported, but LeBron was here early, and I had walked from the studio to the mill room, and I saw a little bit of commotion. I was actually up in the lobby, and I heard some people saying, "LeBron's down there practicing." I was like, "What?" And so I walked out, and I talked with someone that was standing outside the door, and I was like, "Is he in there?" And it's the Pacers practice court that you can sometimes see when you walk in on the east side of the building, not the St. Vincent Center, but it is available for visiting teams to use to get extra shots up, and it's one of those courtesy situations, teams to the opponent. You know, you've got an extra court, you can use it as long as they're not using it. And so the door was shut. I said, "He's in there?" And it's the time that before the buses usually arrive, and I was told that he took a cab from the hotel to the field house to come over to get some shots up on his own. This was after the Cavs had lost at Toronto the night before, and so I'm thinking, that's a bad sign. Yeah. And then the first quarter, validated my fears. The first quarter was awful, and the Pacers still won that game.
They still won, and maybe the biggest moment of it was when Darren Collison got switched on to LeBron and forced him out of bounds. And I think one of the bigger mismatches you could have in the NBA, tiny little Darren Collison on big, powerful LeBron, sums up that game number three. So game number four, Friday, 7:30 tip, 7 o'clock with Jeremiah Johnson on TV, 7 o'clock we have you on radio. We got to get to practice. Practice starts in 3 minutes. Any final thoughts from you?
Yeah, wondering whether we should start our pregame show with a little Dan Gilbert sound. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that would fit pretty well. He's Jeremiah Johnson. I'm Pat Boylan. That game on Saturday against Orlando, that's a sellout. So congrats to all of you for coming out and enjoying that game. But there still are some tickets if you want them on resale, pacers.com/tickets. He's Jeremiah Johnson. I'm Pat Boylan. We'll talk to you next week on the Sideline Guys podcast.